Hello and welcome to Bounty Hunt, a weekly breakdown of the latest episodes of Star Wars Television, brought to you by the Eugenie Podcast Network. I'm your host, Oz, joined as always by my good friend, JG, and we've got two special guests for you this week. We are diving in on The Bad Batch Season 10 and 11, Identity Crisis, and Point of No Return to give you our in-depth reaction and breakdown. But first, a mention, this episode is brought to you by The Eugenie Show, a brand new Eugenie podcast about pretty much everything. Let's get started. Like I mentioned, I'm here with JG. JG, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing pretty well. You know, we're in Charlotte having a good old time and lots of Star Wars to talk about.
That's right. We are in person. We are typically an audio-only podcast, but you may notice if you're in the YouTube feed. I don't know where this is going to be, but you can actually see our face, find out I have a mustache, and you can even see our other...
People should know that just by hearing your voice.
Honestly. Yeah, I do sound like a mustache dad.
At this point.
So you can see our other two guests. First off, the man who signs my paychecks, it's Corey Helton.
Hello.
Corey,
hello.
Welcome to your house.
Thank you. Welcome to my apartment, Corey. Thank you. Thank you, Corey. I appreciate that introduction. Yeah, this is wild, dude. We're in person.
Yeah.
Your mustache is like, I can reach out and touch it if I wanted. I'm not going to, but I could if
Coward.
I wanted to.
And then making his Bounty Hunt return is one of the few people who can rival me in a loudest guy in the room contest. It's Eric Eilerson. Eric.
Oh, it is a proud honor to be among one who also commands a room, whether we should or not.
Frankly. Yeah, I mean.
No, not usually.
Nope. Yeah, usually not, but we do anyway.
We do anyway. And also, as the person who Corey literally does sign my paychecks, it's also very nice to be back in my office.
See, it's a funny joke because Eric gets paid and you don't. You
His paycheck is slightly more than mine.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yours is zero and Eric is slightly more than zero.
If you want to know my exact
paycheck.
But not
too far from zero, to be honest.
If anyone wants their jokes explained, Corey does a great
That's
job.
That's right. That's right.
We'll get a Patreon level where you can unlock my pay stubs.
Well, unfortunately, Jacob could not make the trip down to Charlotte, so we are recording this in his absence.
He's just watching Purdue in the final.
Yeah,
four.
It's something about
that's all he's doing.
Yeah, or something about the bar exam or being newlywed. I don't know.
Weak excuses.
Lots of validation.
But anyway, cheers, everyone. Let's get into these episodes. And this is actually, we kind of mentioned, this is one of the first times a Eugenie podcast of the hundreds of episodes has ever been recorded in person.
We were briefly talking about that before we started recording, and we did the one in Asheville where we interviewed Kevin and George. That was fun.
Yep.
Back in the Living Force days, and we think this is only the second time. There may be one other ally or somewhere out there we're forgetting.
Yeah.
But I think this may be...
Y'all did the panel, which
the panel,
was,
yeah,
that kind of counts.
And like the Eugenie show, obviously, now is changed because of that.
But Wes
like,
is still not fully there.
You know what? That's a great point.
Yeah.
Fully in person.
We are all in person.
All four of us. I've never done four, which is why I'm holding a mic like a plebeian.
Hilarious.
I only own
the
three
Oprah
mics.
Mic.
I know, the Oprah Winfrey mic. And you get a house. I don't know. What does she give away?
Car.
You get a car.
For anyone just listening to this, this is terrible content.
So let's talk about the Bad Batch.
Let's do it, baby.
Let's do it.
The first episode, episode 10 of the season, was Identity Crisis.
Yep.
We start off the episode, we see the CX droid talk with his contact.
You mean Tech.
We'll get to that. And what I want to talk about first is we revealed that in this vault that we've talked about for a couple months now is Grogu in it, is Asajj Ventress in it, is Quinlan Vos in it. Sorry, yep. JG.
Mm-hmm.
What's in the vault?
Yeah.
What's in the vault? Shout out Brad Pitt. He is not a sponsor of this podcast, but...
If he wants to be, we'll take it.
Thank you, Brad.
If anyone wants to be, it doesn't have to be.
Literally, please give us money.
Anyway, so we find out that it is some younglings.
Yeah.
We've got three younglings. We've got an Itachi named Eva, a green one that's maybe Miri Allen, I don't know.
Somewhere.
Named Jax, and then a blue one, Pantoran, possibly, that I don't think we get a name for. What do we think of this?
I love the colors, frankly.
Like, our skin?
Yes.
Okay,
Seriously, the contrast, like, it makes it more... like scary and inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like it feels like this is like not right.
Because they're all non-human.
They're all non-human in the stark colors with the sterile prison environment.
Yeah.
It just felt very
They belong in luscious environments that have many colors in there.
I think it brought more attention to the fact that they're kids, I think. Because like we see kids a lot in Star Wars. We have like the clone cadets and stuff in Clone Tree and Clone Wars and stuff.
And they're all
like,
just Daniel Logan.
Basically, yes. But this felt like... Oh no! These are like really kids. Like this feels
uncomfortable,
gross, and scary, and like ooh, they're experimenting on kids. Like it just made it very much in your face very quickly. Yeah. They don't spend that much time. Like, you see them all together, like, and you're like, there's not much time to have that reaction, like, oh shit, these are kids.
Right. Yeah. And like it reminded me a little bit of Stranger Things, like, when we yes. see the kids in there. But to your point, Corey, I did feel it even more because they were not human, because they clearly don't belong here. They clearly were brought here, and they had such an innocence to them. Like, Jax tries to escape, yes, but Eva is like, I'm gonna get to leave. Can you just find out my day? Like, she's very innocent, and you said it perfectly, JG. Like, it was very uncomfortable. Like, I really felt like I'm watching something that is very discomforting to watch. Yeah. I'm like, these kids don't deserve it. They didn't need to tell us anything. And I really liked the Bad Batch this season is being like, no, the Empire is doing horrible stuff.
What?
But, like, not even just, like, shooting warriors and in battles. Like, no, they're kidnapping kids and right. keeping them. Like, they're very blunt about it, and I really appreciate that for the story, but really felt very uncomfortable watching this.
Yeah, I will remind you that the first act of the Empire was Anakin murdering children.
Yeah, I mean, we can skip over that, too. You know what I mean? Awesome.
Like, I didn't see it. You know what I mean? Like,
what are we going to do? Oh, you're going to die.
Hey, here's a weird take for, I don't know if this is just me. The act, maybe because we're desensitized to violence in Star Wars, like, the act of, like, killing armies or, like, seeing the lightsaber and then the kids go away, like, seeing kids actively taken away from their parents and having to live the days in isolation is almost more disquieting to me than seeing, like, oh, a battle and, like, numbers. It's that, that, like, a million people is a statistic and one person is, like, a tragedy.
Right. No, I mean, that's, I think, a big part of why the prequels was clones versus robots, like, because it doesn't matter.
Great point.
They're all expendable. But then you see, like, oh, this is a 6-year-old child.
Yep. Yeah.
So with those kids, do we think they're Padawans? Former Padawans are just found younglings.
Just kids. Yep. I mean, Cad Bane could have brought them. I know we'll get to him, but I think that's literally how it happened.
Yeah.
And it's just picking up from where the Clone Wars was when Cad Bane was doing it at that point as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he was looking for the Holocron. That was that whole arc.
Yeah. Yep. Like, literally,
Children of the Force, I believe, is what it was called.
This is a small detail, but did you guys catch the point where they were talking about the M-count and the blood? And they said they're not trying, they don't need the midichlorians specifically, they need the bonding agent.
Yeah, so, yeah, Omega's the bonding agent.
Or whatever they call
her blood specifically is the bonding agent for something.
Yeah, it's still really ambiguous what the goal is, than cloning Palpatine is the goal. Yeah, like, I think we all know that.
And I liked that point because, again, I'm not a science person. You're doctor, whatever. But, like, I know that people that took science classes, like,
not a good one.
That's fair. But I think, like, the idea that they made Omega different, even in this episode, I think was actually key. Because I think one of the questions I've had is, like, she has an M count. Don't most other people have M counts? Like, why can't you just get another person with a high M count? But they're like, oh, no, for whatever reason, her blood is a bonding agent for what we assume is Palpatine's blood and X. Like, she is the bridge.
Yeah, so what role did the kids play then?
They're trying to find another Omega, I think.
I think, so my thought, because the whole last episode, the Ventress episode, was about
creating a backdoor pilot for another show.
Correct. And beyond that, it was about, like, is Omega Force sensitive?
Right. Yes.
And now I kind of think, and Corey, you'll like this, I don't think she is.
I don't think so either.
I think so too.
They let us, the last episode, I think they wanted us to think that Ventress was like, I'm not telling you, but she is.
Yeah.
But now it's like, they need Jedi younglings and a bonding agent.
Yes. She is, it's kind of like that. She's like an O blood donor.
She's
a glue. She is a person that can glue anything together. She is an adaptable person. Like, if you find a strong M count and you have a Palpatine empty vessel, for whatever reason, Star Wars science, which also, like, I don't need to be explaining everything.
No, it's
legitimately fine. Like, say, her bonding agent bonds the M-count blood to this clone.
Did he get that right? O is universal donor?
I'm not answering the questions this show off.
I can never remember.
Make sure to donate blood, everybody. Unless it hurts, then don't.
No, I actually still do.
No, still do. We always have a shortage. Yeah. Please do.
Shout out Salvation Army, not a sponsor of this show. Anyway, so, yeah, I thought that was interesting because And Corey, you don't need to rant about this. You can if you want. I wasn't a fan of Omega being force sensitive.
Oh god, we don't have to get into that.
She's probably not though. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I don't think it'll matter. I don't think they're going to revisit that.
No,
I thought they were, but after this,
it was not. I thought it was heavily implied that she failed all the tests. And that's kind of how it made it seem. Like, whereas Anakin in Phantom Menace is like, is it a? It's a cup. It's a ship. Like he passed. Like Mace Windu looks. He's like. Oh, he passed. We get it. Like, you know, that's what happened.
Like, Mace is in the room with
us. I was, right?
That was astonishing.
For the audio only listen.
That's right.
Yeah, he really did a great job showing Mace Windu, whose book just got delayed by 2 months.
All right, we're not talking about books. Actually, we will there in a second.
We'll get there.
Okay, so actually, that's a great segue. Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
So there's been a bunch of Star Wars stories over the years talk about kind of younglings and their force sensitivity. We've got this now. Fallen Order kind of covers the same thing.
Yep, it does.
Yeah. Yep. Obi-Wan Kenobi a little with the open path.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Open path.
Right. Just the path you face path. To apologist. It's
every path of the open hand.
Sorry,
two
Jacob.
Names between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Jedi Survivor that they call it different. Anyway.
The path. Yeah.
Mando with Grogu, obviously. The Last Jedi with my boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Tamiri Blagg.
Yep.
King.
Corey, do you know who Tamiri Blagg is?
Dude, I have no idea who you're talking about right now.
Wow. Broom Boy.
A Broom Boy? That's his name?
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I didn't know that at all. I exclusively knew his Broom Boy.
Yeah.
Nope.
That is JG's favorite Star Wars character.
No, it's not.
Because you're 98% of fans.
I'm not even kidding. Top five.
All right, that's like... The bell curve, you know? You're over there, dude.
I could write a whole essay. We will get to that later.
Obviously, like, Tales of the Jedi into the Clone Wars, we see Ahsoka get taken.
Yeah.
So that kind of brings up, like, the difference between this and the Jedi taking younglings isn't that different.
Not that different.
Nope. But this is a great point, because I think I have very much gone back and forth on this over the years, and I'd love to actually hear his take on this. I have gotten to the point of, like, you know, the Jedi take people from their families. And I think that is a very, it's an easy story thing. It's kind of almost a meme thing now.
Yeah.
And I think that, earnestly, I think Jedi storytelling, or storytelling about Jedi, rather, in the last couple of years has tried to clarify that a little bit of, like Plo Koon, like, seeing Ahsoka, like, he kneels down and, like, offers his hand. Like, they kind of try to tell her things. And coming up, no spoilers for you guys, in The Living Forest by John Jackson Miller, this is actually addressed. It's kind of a more acknowledging what the kids should do. It's more of a conversation thing than a kidnapping. But I do love the idea that the Empire is like, we're just going to keep doing this, and they kind of reduce it in order to make it seem more palatable.
You're right that it's almost a meme. Like, it's one of those in-universe things that was never meant to be explored more.
Yeah,
and I think once you open that door, it looks kind of gross, and it's hard to make an explanation, but you kind of just need it. Otherwise, the Jedi Order doesn't work.
Yeah, that's right.
George Lucas
is a hack. He's canceled. I bet if you ask George about 98% of the things in canon, he's like, I don't know.
All right.
What do you mean? Did the Jedi kidnap children? No.
Okay, so it took 15 minutes for Eric to get his George Lucas impression out.
More are coming.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. That, like,
you have to do it, but it doesn't, you can't really explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's messy no matter what.
Yeah, if you look into it, it's like,
don't think too hard.
Yeah. Which I know is also sort of the point of whole prequel trilogy.
But I think that what they've done lately with, like, Wayseekers and the High Republic, is that it's like, you can leave the Jedi.
That's right.
I think that is literally the difference.
I'm not trying to say the Jedi is
the end. I know, but I think that is for me that what I realized, it took me a long time to realize, like, you can leave the Jedi if you want.
Yeah.
And you can't leave the little box that Cad Bane put you in.
No. And if you try, you're gonna get put in a smaller box for two rotations.
Yeah.
That was
arrows.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was a good joke.
That was good.
I mean, it was just a reference to the episode.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah,
it was insane into Oz's parenting style as well.
That's in the notes. We're getting there.
Great.
But there is, of course, one other story that deals with young kids getting taken as Jedi, and that is this a sort of prelude to Project Harvester? Now, go ahead, Corey. Ask me, what's Project Harvester?
Hey, Oz. I don't know what the hell that is. What is Project Harvest?
Oh, thank you. So in Servants of the Empire.
Yep.
This is not a joke. It's actually relevant.
Oh my God.
That series, it's a junior novel series. I've mentioned it a few times on this podcast.
Tremendous.
Just a few.
It's about the Empire taking kids. It takes place about 15 years later than this series. It's run by Brindle Hux, which is Armitage Hux's. If you've only seen the movie, just General Hux is fine. It's his father taking force.
Reed Phasma.
Yeah, read Phasma. Go read Phasma.
Book's great.
But first, read Servants of the Empire.
Sorry.
Where they're taking the Inquisitors are rounding up little Force-sensitive kids. So it feels like there's a connection there. JG, have you even read these books?
Not yet.
God damn.
They're on the to read.
Yeah.
I started the first one.
You own it, Corey. And I know you own it because I gave it to you.
I know you gave it to me, and it's beautiful. I do have to say, but I haven't read it yet. It is prominently on display if you hadn't noticed it yet.
But this, I think, will tie in with that. I hope that they bring Jason Fry in to write a connection there. But let's move on to the stuff y'all want to talk about. I could talk about Servants of the Empire 90 minutes, and I have. Check out Star Wars Archives.
Smooth.
Brilliant. Yeah. So in this cloning facility, or not cloning facility, I guess kind of, Emery Carr finds herself in a new role.
Yeah.
She does.
She was amazing in this episode.
Yeah, she's kind of the driving force of the whole thing.
We've had a lot of questions, I think, about her up to this point. Like what the hell is she doing?
What's her loyalty?
Like,
what's her motive?
Isn't it kind of weird how we blew right past the fact that, like, she's just like Omega?
Like,
we just accepted it. Like, it was such a shocker that we have a girl clone, a child clone, and then, like, we meet this other one, and Omega literally says several times, like, she's just like us. She's just like me.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, but she's been she didn't have the, like, Omega is so great because she had Nalase, who believed in her and tried to get her out. Mm-hmm. Now she has the Bad Batch, who have kind of changed her mind and tried to get her out and tried to free her. Whereas Dr. Carr, we see she's just been in the system her whole life.
Yeah, it's like Omega is like, it's also kind of implied that, like, Omega is like special, right? We know about the MCAL stuff, but like,
she's blonde.
That is,
that's true. But it sort of implied that that Emery's like kind of like a reject a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like she's kind of like,
well, it seems that she, I guess, had the accelerated aging.
Yeah.
I think we should
let the other clones.
Yeah. Whereas Omega did not, just like Boba Fett.
They also tease and implied that, like, she had also horrible stuff done to her as well when she was a child.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to something I usually don't talk about in the Bad Batch. It's like, is the animators specifically with Emery Carr, I think they did a great job of somehow animating, like, pain behind her eyes.
It's the glasses, I think.
Okay, that might
leaves room for interpretation.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the, we learned about this with the YouTube thing, the Korsachov effect, you know what I'm talking about? You know what that is? It's like the Korsachov effect is when you show somebody's face with no emotion on it, and it leaves room for the viewer to put their own interpretation of it.
Right.
Yeah. They've studied this, and like you can show viewers multiple different types of faces next to other images, and they imply that it means pain, or it means love, or it means joy. Like, you can put all these different emotions on it, and because you can't really see her eyes a little bit, like, maybe it leaves room for interpretation.
Yeah. I like that a lot, actually.
Also, those glasses really fast are very hard to see through. Like, can we just say that? Can you imagine just walking around with, like, red and there's a grid? Like, how do they see
Apple Vision Pro, but, like, four generations ahead of
that? Exactly. It sucks.
Yeah. Okay. But she does a great job. I do like that. And also, like, shout out to the animators for making it a little like Andor.
I've been so close to bringing it up. Sorry, JG, this is Andor.
No, yeah, this is the most Andor episode, obviously, since the first one, which no coincidence also took place on Tantus.
Yeah.
She has a lot of moments of silence, of silent observation.
She does.
Where she thinks before she says the thing, and then she'll say, like, you know, a little thing to a kid, like, I'll look into that.
That's kind of the question of her thinking, right? Like,
yes.
it makes you wonder. Like, I genuinely don't know. Like, I probably got a different experience than you guys did. Like, do you think that she's thinking, like, it's kind of implied, I think, that she's going to, like, try to save everybody.
Yes. Right? Unquestionable. Like, unquestionable.
For me. That's the story. Yes. They're starting to plant the seed. But up until this point, she's been very neutral. Is she a good guy? Is she a bad guy?
Like, so, I think the big thing here is she gets this new role where she's not necessarily been an antagonist, but she's very, by the books, Empire.
This is my job. This is what I'm going to do.
It would serve you better, Omega, to, like, just follow the rules.
Yeah,
like,
but now she's seen behind the curtain, and she doesn't like what she sees.
Yes. I mean, it's the classic fascist sympathizer thing of, like, it doesn't affect me, I'm gonna keep going, this is for the greater purpose. And then once you see the actual horrors of, like, her line to cross wasn't clothes, wasn't battle. Omega started to get there, but Omega escaped pretty quickly, relatively speaking. I mean, she gave Omega back the doll, right? She even, like, started to break there, and then she saw three kids, and then saw, this is infinite kids now. This isn't, and then they are not gonna escape, was like, okay, this is not my line.
So, how do we compare her with Nalase? Because it seems like they were sort of at odds before.
That's true.
And she's the successor, I think.
Yeah, and now she has to, like, go, and Nalase's like, oh, just when you kick me out, now you want my help, whatever, basically.
I almost, again,
that was a good scene, by the way.
That was very.
I'm very glad they did that. Like, that left a lot of, that put a lot of question, I think, about the whole experience. It's like, whose side is everybody on? Whose side is Nalase on? Like, I mean, she's sort of chosen her side, I think, already, but, like,
Nalase's been an odd character in this show. And, like, again, someone that I never thought about, really, like, past the prequels. But she's interesting because she has known the game, I think, longer. Mm-hmm. So she has played it slower. I think I think that at face value, Nalase is a little more of a sympathizer when she's actually just been playing it in a very quieter fashion to get Omega out. Mm-hmm. Whereas Emery Carr sees it, and then I think now she's just acting a little quicker. Now she's like, oh, I don't have time to milk this for 10 years. I need to get these kids out. And I think that's where she ends the episode.
I think Emery also sees Omega and the kids, and I think that also starts to break her down. Yeah.
They use that a lot in storytelling, I feel like. Like kids. Kids are where a lot of people draw the line, right? It's like I was cool with this until kids are involved.
Yep.
Yes.
And I feel like it's like one of those like moral foundations that like you can't touch, like you can't get close to, otherwise
like an adult can choose to be a rebel, and if I believe in order and this rebel is fighting against me, they've made a choice to defy order.
Mm-hmm.
But if a kid does it, then I'm like, they haven't.
Yes.
Have they made a choice? Have they been doing it? If I kidnap some, like, it's kidnap. Mm-hmm. It's in the name, kidnap.
I mean, if you think about any like photo you've seen from war that left an impact on you, it was probably of a kid.
Kid stuff.
There's so many of those pictures throughout history, and I think you're right. That's what Emery is seeing here.
Yeah.
And JG mentioned, I guess, a lot of people on Twitter were like, I have kids, and I can't rewatch this episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
John Hoey on Resistance Broadcast literally said, like, it took him a couple times to finish it, straight up. Like, he's like, I will never rewatch this episode. It's good storytelling, but I can't do it.
I've watched it twice, and I do.
How's your son?
I don't know. He's out here with me. He's with his grandmother right now, having a good time. Last I saw
his grandmother, Nalase.
No.
In the Clone Wars, I want to bring this up. Actually,
yeah.
In the Clone Wars, we introduced Cad Bane with a plot to steal the holocron,
right?
Like with the kids. Like, it's used to imply how evil Cad Bane is, right?
Yes.
So it's a common storytelling device to use. Like, children are involved in the evil experiments to explain how terrible the Empire is. And it did a great job. It felt very scary and icky and stuff in this episode, I think.
I also did like that. I think we've almost risked getting to a point with these shows that bounty hunters actually all have hearts of gold. And then, like, Boba Fett and Fennec Shand are
not Cad Bane, dude.
Cad Bane is cold as hell.
Like, he sucks, man.
No, Cad Bane rules.
He's so cool. I agree. Yeah. He's like,
but he doesn't. It's the job.
I know.
That's all it is.
No F's given.
Yes,
that's true.
I appreciated that kind of really harsh line on the ground.
Boba Fett was always supposed to be that. In the sort of Legends of You, I think he more was, but like I don't know. It's like, kind of like the Phantom Menace. As soon as you bring him, you show him as a kid. It kind of does that a lot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
that was a big part of Patton Oswalt's big rant.
Yes.
10, 15 years ago.
It's hilarious.
Hey, don't you like Boba Fett? You want to see him as a kid?
Exactly. Exactly. It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that, obviously, the Empire is very evil. Emery seems to be learning that. So do we think she's going to rebel against Hemlock?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think it's implied.
Now, whether she'll be successful or not, I don't know, but she will try.
Is that what you want? I don't care if that's what you want. I think it's what has to happen. I think that's Star Wars, right? Star Wars is always like the good guy has to win. You have to not lose your humanity and your hope and all those things.
There's people inside the system that see the evil, even if they know they're going to fail, have to try to fight against it.
Exactly.
So I think that's, honestly, that's the most George Lucas thing of all.
I think it has to happen that way.
Yeah. He literally decided, like, hey, Star Wars, he was said a lot, is based on a lot of the Vietnam War. Yeah. And the bad guys at that time were the country that George Lucas lived in. Right. He's like, a part of probably the problem, and I'm going to talk against it, even if I don't win, even if that's not the end goal.
Right.
I have to try, and I think that the most heroic people are some of those people in the Empire or the First Order or the Sith, like people that know they might die.
They choose to do good.
Yes,
they choose, right,
in spite of consequence.
She's going to die, though. Like, sorry, she's not going to survive.
That's probably a take. Interesting.
Give it up for Omega.
So she may go against Hemlock. Meanwhile, Hemlock seems to be fighting his own battle with one of the cameos we haven't talked about yet.
That's a good point.
Governor Tarkin. Or
the biggest battle against paperwork. Getting funding for his passion project.
Here's a fun question. Is Tarkin actually responsible for the downfall of the Empire because he keeps meddling in everybody's business?
Yeah, so this
that's
really,
why they blow him up.
This mirrors Tarkin's fight with Thrawn, which I think was in the third treason. Thrawn treason,
yeah.
And with Krennic in the
With Krennic with the Death Star, then with Thrawn about the TIE Defender program.
Yes.
And now I guess he's not a fan of Project Necromancer.
Yeah. Listen, the Emperor needs to tell Tarkin to stay in his damn lane, right? Because
Tarkin doesn't even know.
Tarkin just wants to make sure that the projects are finished and the funding, because we have limited funds.
I don't think that's it at all. I think Tarkin wants to be in charge of everything. He wants to be the Emperor's main guy.
You know what it is?
Like, he's mad because the Emperor wasn't letting him
in. And all these other people keep having good ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's by design, by the Emperor, right? Yeah.
That, man, now I'm like subscribing to the Death Star was an inside job theories where it's like the Emperor was trying to get rid of Tarkin.
Maybe so.
Tarkin is like everyone that's ever run a nonprofit in their life. He's like, we have limited donations. I know what I want to do, and I don't care if your idea is good. I've had this project in mind for 2 years, and we finally got enough people to listen to NPR to give me the money that I need.
That's right.
And I don't care if Thrawn has an idea. I don't care if Critic has an idea. And he just wants to poke, and then he wants to go hunt people's turtles on his own planet.
Yeah. great reference.
Rio,
check out Darth Vader 2017 by Charles Soule.
Yeah, is that annual?
I love that Tarkin's like, what is this project? Yep. And Hemlock's just like, nah, dude, you're not on the list.
Exactly.
he was
baller
like,
move.
Yes, he's like, you can't know about this.
Yeah, Hemlock sucks, but that was
awesome. It was a baller move. He was like, it's classified.
Yeah.
Hemlock sucks. One of my favorite performances in the show, though.
He's scary.
Like, also, this actor, he's always kind of plays this guy. Mm-hmm. I forget his name, but he's been on a lot of shows. He is a tremendous, like, soft-spoken, very intense.
Evil. He's got his hand. What's up with his hand, dude?
We're going to find out.
He's always like, oh, my hand hurts. You know what I mean? Like, what's up with
that? Is that where he puts his tension? Maybe, you know what I wonder? Because a lot of times they put the actors... In Clone Wars, they did this a lot. They put the actors in the studio together to like talk to each other to get a more earnest performance. So then sometimes they would record it and do motion capture off of it. I almost wonder if that's something the actors started doing like
maybe
in the booth. And they're like, okay, well, let's do it.
Hope it's good.
Was that something?
It's a post-COVID world. No one goes into a studio anymore.
That's a great point. I was Zoom in his broom closet.
Maybe the Emperor like cut his hand off.
Yeah.
Like, it's his punishment mechanical for something. And now he's like he has to win in spite of the Emperor. Maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I doubt that's going to happen.
That would be good, though. Maybe after work, he plays a lot of Fortnite.
Yeah. It's always in a glove. You notice that?
Gore's got a headcannon going.
I know.
He's got a little loose cut on.
I like it.
It's his left hand.
It's a black glove. Like, Luke also had a black glove, and so did Anakin.
Right.
Black glove means with robot hand.
It does. That's what it means.
All right. He does have one of the best lines in the episode. He says, children are easier to obtain. They're more agreeable to the subjugations, unaware of why they're here. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Freaking,
it's chilling.
Cold, man.
He
it's
is
calculating.
He's scary. He's like evil scientist scary, but not like funny evil scientist.
No,
like, he doesn't have a German accent specifically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No,
like the Blue Shadow Virus guy. He wasn't like that.
Yeah. Oh my god, the Blue Shadow Virus.
my evil.
Yeah, no.
Recipe.
Hemlock, I think, is why Hemlock is scary to me. Is that I think he's one of the most realistic villains in Star Wars.
Mm.
I think like this is a real guy. I think this is a guy that studied.
It's cold.
And I think he knows everything. I think he got really high marks. I think he got a great government job.
He's able to separate from
the
humanity.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about that in this episode of like, don't talk to him. Don't get to know
him. They're specimens.
Yeah, they're not. It's not Eva. It's SP-54. It's not Jax. It's SP-32.
Yeah.
Which also, I'm just now realizing, SP-54, that means there's 53 other of these kids.
That's exactly it.
Like, dad.
Also, here's a question for you.
There's only three in the room.
Does
what the hell happened to
the
kids?
Oh, they're
gone. She asked Bane, or Cad Bane. She was like, "Where did you get this kid? Have you had other jobs like this?"
Yeah,
and he was like, "Don't ask me those."
Yeah.
Like, well, here's a question for you guys, because this is again a question in the moment. Hemlock is so cold, and he's like, "Don't call her that. Call her this." Is he telling her that because those are lessons that he had to learn to get rid of his own humanity? Did he use to call them by their names and then he had to separate?
Yeah. Yes. And the Emperor cut off his hand. And...
Wait, I don't know. Like, man, like, how are you clowning harder than I am?
We don't talk enough, Oz.
Yeah, that's right.
His hand is actually the hand of Barriss Offee.
Not doing it. So one last thing, because we got to get moving to the next episode. There were two of these and we've been going a while. But you mentioned him. We got to talk about Cad Bane.
Cad Bane.
Yes. Yep.
I was shocked to see him, honestly.
Yeah, I think, JG, you called it last week.
One of my few predictions I got right.
Because you've gotten a lot wrong.
I've gotten a lot wrong. You're as 50 at heart. You just keep doing it, and eventually you're right.
Duros do not miss as a species.
Correct.
Cad Bane rules. Lula, God, I'm bringing in the comics, but Lula rules.
Yep.
Who are the other?
Who's that guy from Battlefront?
Yeah, the guy from
Battlefront. Shriv
was dope, dude. Shriv's I loved him.
So now we got Cad Bane, sort of the OG of the fan favorite Duros characters.
Yep.
And Toto 360.
I love him. Seth Green.
Seth Green's back.
Yeah, no, I love him. Also, the fact that I love that Dave Filoni was like, I'm making the Star Wars show, and this character, he's got cowboy spurs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're
But I thought about that.
I hear the spurs, I'm like, it's Cad Bane.
Yeah, Boba Fett has him too. Because remember, there was all that talk.
No, you're right.
Cad Bane and they have the Spurs.
It goes to the Western theme that they had in the second season.
Yeah,
the showdown with Hunter.
It's unabashedly Western, and it works.
I did have a moment when Cad Bane came in, and I was like, where are we on the timeline right now? Like, that was a weird moment. It's weird things that pull me out that make me think about the timeline. It's weird.
Well, it's problematic then.
It's not problematic. It was just like I was fine with this like vague we are like in between the episodes. This is the farthest forward we've seen Cad Bane in the timeline besides Mandalorian.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying though. Like, this is post Clone Wars. Yes. Not seen him. Like,
yes. No.
So I was like,
comics and books.
No, we saw him in season. He's in Bad Batch previously.
Yes, but this is further.
Yeah,
he's in the Darth Maul comic by Cullen Bunn. That's before Phantom Menace. I'm wrong. He's in it, but on the timeline.
This is now the furthest right before his.
It's interesting to see that like the Clone Wars have ended, 66 has happened, and Cad Bane is still Cad Bane.
Bounty hunters don't care who's in charge.
I don't know why it weirdly took me out. Like,
that's odd, really.
I don't know why it is. I guess it's because this show is so Clone Wars. It's just so
It's so like
Empire and Clone Wars, and then Cad Bane's in it. It's like, what the hell?
They like almost could have gotten away with calling this Clone Wars season 8, 9, 10.
They really could have.
Would have been a lot dicey.
I'm glad they didn't, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So I just mentioned there's been at least 54. Do we think those are all Cad Bane, or are there other Class 1 bounty hunters?
Both.
Yeah. What other Class 1 bounty hunters? Can we talk about that? How do you get to Class 1? That's like pretty dope.
You level up your skill tree enough, and then you get the extra skipping powers and stuff.
Because my prediction was Boba Fett.
At this point?
Oh, yeah. Well,
not at this point.
Not anymore. He's Alpha, we think. Mm-hmm. She's Omega, because they mentioned that back in Cad Bane's first appearance.
I hear you. I think
on this show. So I was like, Boba Fett has to factor into this clone story. Now I don't think there's time left or room in the story.
No.
But I thought it was going to be him.
No, Cad Bane's Alpha probably. And ask Forlom. Like, are they already at that level?
4LOM.
We're filming. go die.
No, I hate that. But that is Ethan Sachs told me to my face. It is Forlom.
That's right, Ethan. I love the work that you do. It's Forlom.
No, you basically said the same thing.
Also, I know we always spell out R2-D2 in the books. That's stupid. Okay, like just write the letters.
Listen, I don't remember the name of the. You remember the name of the series? It's not a YA series, like a teen series, like a young reader series that like there's a lot of young Boba Fett in it.
The young Boba Fett books and Legends.
Jedi Apprentice, maybe? Is that what it's called? Jedi Apprentice?
That's before my times.
Yeah.
I think it was Jedi Apprentice series, and they're short. They're like little bitty chapter books. They're like the weird young reader.
Oh, sorry, did someone mention junior novels?
Junior novels, yes. And we get to see a lot of like teen Boba Fett like start to become a badass Boba Fett.
So,
like not like kid... Incompetent Boba Fett. Struggling with his morality.
You read some of those,
Not that, but like teen Boba Fett. Like there's a book I remember. It's got Obi Wan on the cover, and he's like doing this funny thing with a lightsaber.
Yep.
And he's afraid. I think he's like really. He's got this funny scared face, and he's facing off Boba Fett in his book. And like 16-year-old Boba Fett is like low key scary as hell.
Yeah, no,
like,
they do a great job with him.
He's got all these weapons, all this crazy stuff. Yeah.
I'm like, I was hoping that we were getting.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like we only have two options for Boba Fett. We have Dark and Moody from Empire, and we have Child and
totally
Annoying.
Incompetent.
And then we've got potentially reformed whatever happened in Book of Boba Fett.
Exactly, I guess, right.
I think my favorite line on Cad Bane, and then we can move on, but it was actually from Toto 360 when he's like, I'm not a nanny droid. Yes. And then he just shoves, he says, you there, stop that, to the crying baby, shoves it in a box. And I'm like, yeah, that's parenting, right? Like I said, I'm a father.
You feel so seen.
There's times where I've wanted to, but I have not.
I did laugh out loud when he was like, I did it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, parenting's easy.
Toto 360 is a wonderful example of like Star Wars comedy, because Star Wars comedy can be really hard sometimes. You go a little too far. He's perfectly used.
Isn't he dead?
But I saw him in the episode.
Like, he died when he blew up in the Jedi Temple.
You can rebuild a droid.
That's a good question.
Didn't he die? I had to thought. I was like, this guy is dead in the timeline. Yes, when they broke into the temple, he's in the vents. And remember, like, Mace Windu and Yoda, they're all in, like, the communications tower. And he's like, oh, no, it's a bomb. And then it blows up. Like, he puts the bomb in the back of his head. That's the whole plot of the episode.
Rebuild a droid.
Maybe so, but that droid is definitely dead. I don't know if we saw him again after that in the Clone Wars. But
A quick Wook scroll didn't show that. Well, we can look into that.
We'll look at that.
Like, who else survived? Comment. Mace Windu.
Yeah, okay. We're moving on. This is going to go long. I'm just warning you, Corey. Corey wanted this to be done in like 20 minutes. This is going to be a big one.
That's all right. That's
We're moving on to episode 11, Point of No Return. This episode is brought to you by The Utini Show, a new show from the Utini Podcast Network that's about a whole lot of things. Eric, why don't you tell us what it's about?
Absolutely. So The Utini Show is kind of a relaunch of a show that a bunch of us used to do called The Living First Podcast. You can join me, Corey, and our buddies Charles and Wes every single Monday as we dive into fandoms. The Utini Show is a live recorded show that every week we look into a fandom either we love or a fandom we don't know a lot about and discover it. And it's basically just a chance to celebrate everything we talk about here at Utini. So check it out on the Utini YouTube channel, or you can go to the Utini Show podcast feed or the Living Forest podcast feed for the first 10 episodes or so and enjoy that. So again, me, Corey, Charles, and Wes are with you every Monday. We look forward to exploring a lot of things coming up this next season. And now, unfortunately, back to Oz.
We open, actually, again, on the CX droid, I think, but we're on Pabu. We're comfy, right?
Mm. We're on Pabu.
Pabu is, it tries to be comfy, but we all saw this coming, though, to be clear, right?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
As soon as you meet this happy little nice planet, you're like, oh, yeah, they're dead.
Yeah, that is, that's a good cue for... Thank you.
Very good.
I noticed the parallels in this episode for the first time, and it took me way too long, of Mount Tantus and Pabu. How they're, like, both the identical shape, but they're, like, different color tones and such. Yeah. And how it's been getting darker.
Identical, you mean they're both mountains.
Basically. I mean, it's nice. Yeah, no,
New Era One Pabu. It makes sense. I do always like the idea of the home planet, like, the base you go to stock up and stuff. But it was interesting because we got to Pabu, not through Pabu, though, necessarily. We had to go find Wanda Sykes at her gas station.
Yeah. Which I don't think we've actually really seen refueling in Star Wars.
No, like, actively. Like,
the little pipe kind of, like, jiggled. Or
yeah.
It was, like, kind of weird. Like,
I love that it's, like, a 1950s full-service gas station. You, like, tip the kid.
JJ mentioned...
Yes. On the website and the information that we can actually look up this time, they have different grades of fuel.
They got unleaded. They got premium.
It was a very weird, random point-to-point on the StarWars.com. Oh, yeah, just like in real life, there's, like, premium and normal fuel. Yep. It's like, what about ethanol-free? Do you drive a tractor? You have to make sure.
Some E95,
exactly,
baby.
Dude.
This is not a bit. What is her name?
Fee.
Okay.
Fee.
Yeah. She is back. All right. She got her thing. I did at the moment, and this is the only... So you see, he got taken out by Cad Bane's timeline thing. The only time I got taken out in these two episodes, which I loved both of them really, truly, close your door. Lock the ship.
Ship security is so nonchalant throughout Star Wars.
It is wild.
I mean, in her defense, I mean, she, like, parks in a closed...
Yeah. No,
she does. It's not like a gas station where you pull up and people are coming and going.
In the future,
like,
though, I think she would.
We're in a docking bay. Yeah. There should be anybody else in here.
Well, does she even know that she got...
No, probably not.
Yeah.
How does she know anything? She hit the big knife
when
out.
She gets back. Yeah, she gets the knife out.
She suspected something. She's, a pirate.
Distrustful, but... Thanks, Oz.
Yeah, that's good. Pirate.
That's good. But yeah, overall, though, I do think by getting back to Pabu, like, I'm also glad they didn't make us wait for it too much.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, no, they're going to get there. They're going to attack.
Yeah, but so we're talking about being comfy on Pabu. This seems to be a recurring thing in Star Wars. Can soldiers just be happy after a war? Like, is that possible? This is not like a real word question. I'm talking, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah. I think the answer is no.
Because we see the clones, obviously, throughout this and the Bad Batch. People leaving the Jedi Order, even during and then, of course, after Order 66.
Yep.
Like, there's no sense of normalcy. Or people trying to leave the Empire. We got Sienna Ree and Lost Stars.
Mm-hmm.
All this, just like, no one can just...
It's almost like the burden of, like, the leadership of being involved in all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Like, Princess Leia could have never had a normal life.
She can retire.
Yeah, like, she and Evan and Herlane can't just go live on happiness on a beach together. Evan, Han, except in my fan fiction.
There you go. Han can't do that. He can't just go back to being a smuggler and being happy. Yeah. It's not possible.
Right.
But, you know, they've been too involved in galactic events. And, you know, all the clones were pawns in this horrible war, like, by the Sith, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, like, how can you just be like, yep, we sure did fight and die. I guess we'll just, you know, go off and have a simple life.
Just live on this island planet.
And even the closest we get is, like, you know, Rex, Gregor, and Wolf. Like, they have, they do go off and they kind of have what we assume is at least a couple years of craziness with the animals. On Gregor. But it is peace. Thank you. But it is kind of peace. You know what I mean? Like, they do kind
of... Half of Hunter's face is tattooed. Like,
you can't have peace with a face tattoo.
Wrecker's 14 feet tall.
I know, like, 380.
We do have my boy Cut LaQuane. He sort of pulled it off.
Yeah, that's actually a great point.
Corey, Cut LaQuane is the clone who went off and found himself a little Twi'lek wife.
Yeah. It was called, what was that episode called? Like the Desert? Not the Deserter. That's an Avatar.
Someone, it actually might have been.
Was it called the Deserter?
If it's not called Cut and Run, it should have been.
Oh, wait. Yeah, actually legit.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
I like that.
This is not a Clone Wars podcast. So we don't know.
But I think that is a great point of, like, you know, soldiers. What do soldiers do after war is such a... I mean, it's an eternal question, right? In the real world and in fiction, like, the idea of the soldier finding peace. Like, when your job is life and death, anything after that is inherently not as important. Anything after that is inherently lesser than... And even if there's not a war to fight, you will find a battle to fight, which is the tragedy of the soldier. Is the tragedy of the person.
I've loved that question, too, especially in regards to the clones, because that it's like an extra layer deep, because they were, like, literally bred for war.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they were grown for it.
I know. And the Republic Commando novels, like, that's, like, a huge recurring theme in them. I love that. I read those books when I was, like, a teenager, and they haven't held up quite that well right here. But we won't go there. But yes, I love that question. And, like, this show is kind of putting that in the canon eyes kind of for the first time, I think, is, like, what about the clones? They age fast. Yeah. They were bred for war. Like, what do they do now?
Yeah.
Like, some of them don't even agree with, like, the new vision, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, on either side.
Exactly.
Like, we see that. We see the bar in the clone, and the Clone Wars, like, after the war's ended, where the clones are all hanging on the clone bar and being like, well, I don't know what the Empire is, like, what should we be doing? And then they get, like, taken out because of that.
Yeah. So they go work for the space IRS. Sure. Like, get a job.
See, another great example y'all are missing because y'all are fake Star Wars fans is Doza in Resistance.
Oh, here it is.
Yes. Where he hangs up his Imperial uniform and everything and is now, like, in charge of... Why am I for Colossus? That's what it is.
Yeah, and he just runs a racing circuit for fun.
Yeah.
I feel like...
I can think of worse ways to retire. Honestly.
I was gonna say Corey's here. I'm like, wait a minute.
Actually,
I'm gonna put the podcasts away.
That's right.
One of the best episodes focuses on him, where he literally just keeps looking at his old Imperial uniform. He hangs it in his closet, and how he still has regrets to this day about what he did in the Empire.
Well, you mentioned Zero to the Empire. You mentioned Resistance. It's only natural then.
Mentioned Dune.
I'm not mentioning Dune.
Dune Part 2, go see it in theaters.
Oh,
we
did it.
If you don't, Eric will go see it for you.
AMC A-list. Nicole Kidman.
Bill Organa. Is it?
But
he's also a great example of, like, I think that people, like, he was obviously very instrumental in the politics of the prequels, and then he's instrumental in the politics of the Empire because he realizes that, I think the curse of being in the system is realizing it's never finished.
Yeah. Right.
And whether that's in a positive or a negative way, like, Bail realized, I was in the war was over, oh my god, now it's been replaced with something worse, I now need to start over again and form a rebellion and keep building, which then passed on to Leia to be like, even after the Galactic Civil War ended, she's like, okay, it's over, okay, god, now we gotta build a government. So I think there's, when you're inside something that into that integral way, you have the curse of seeing everything has to be fixed. That you can't have rest, because if you rest, someone in the system will suffer. And I think that guilt will never leave you.
And remind me, does Bail gets out? He makes it, like, he's safe and everything?
For a while.
Okay.
Cool. Till 1 ABY, 0 BY.
Yeah. Did we release the Star Wars characters video yet? I think we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video?
Okay. Yeah.
He's in New Hope for a second.
He's in New Hope for a second.
Oh, yeah. Poor buddy. But so then, yes, so the Empire comes to Pabu. We cannot have time off as a soldier, which I think I mentioned this recently. My wife, when I told her we were doing this podcast, she's like, and that's the show for kids. I'm like, well, you're thinking of Young Jedi Adventures. Again, I have a 2-year-old. I was like, this one's, it's animated and it's mostly for kids, but the most recent theme was PTSD. So kind of.
That's a good question. Who is the show for?
I think... all that,
Clone Wars fans.
That all goes over kids. Like, yeah. Kids aren't like, oh, man, how do you get out of war as a soldier? No. Kids are like, Catman!
Exactly. I know.
Rekka! Like that.
I mean, it was the same thing for us. Like, I watched Hey Arnold growing up. Like, you watched that show as an adult, it's like, dude, the theme of this show is, like, homelessness.
The pigeon guy episode.
Pigeon guy episode.
Dude, Helga's mom's an alcoholic.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She's always wasted.
And her dad's abusive.
I'm like, yeah. Go get more lemonade. So the Empire shows up to Pabu.
They do.
And shit gets bad.
They do. They start blowing up the ships. They're kind of scary. And
R.I.P.
Honestly, they were a little... I thought they held back a little bit. Like,
yeah. What is the CX clone say? He goes, I've barely done anything yet. But yes. I can do worse.
He's right, too. We've seen the Empire do a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, and he goes, until she's turned over to me... your island will burn.
Mm, yeah.
Like, damn, dude dropping bars.
I know.
I think it's honestly, because we've seen, I think the most horrifying thing in this season, or no, sorry, the series so far, is the bombing of Kamino.
God, right? Like, that was so good.
They unload on it, and I think they don't, purely because...
well, they have to take her alive.
Exactly.
Yes.
The one thing they need Omega alive. So any home you burn, any shot you fire, anything you do has the potential to hit Omega or something, and then you're dead. Like, the only thing is to keep this person alive, so they're like, okay, we're going to occupy, fully, basically putting it under siege, in a way. I'm like, we're going to occupy you until this happens, but I thought that was a great point about, like, we've seen what you can do, and you can absolutely burn this. True.
Well, we're still in the early days of the Empire, so I think we have to add the context that, like, the Empire is still trying to, like, get everyone to, like, love them and buy into their ideology and everything at this point.
They're not doing a great job.
That's where they start to, like, this is when they start to go, like, super, like, militaristic and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm trying to say.
The sheer amount of resources, too, they're spending on, like, capturing Omega is pretty impressive, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Tarkin's pissed about. He's like, have you seen your budget?
I know,
the Emperor does not care about the Empire. It is all about immortality.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think Tarkin realizes that?
No. I don't think he knows.
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't think he knows Palpatine's a Sith. I don't think he knows that Palpatine's trying to become immortal.
Why is that? Is he in denial about it?
I don't think
I don't think he knows.
Is it? I always wonder, is it not public information, or at least public within the inner circle, that he's a Sith?
No.
But Tarkin.
No.
Is there anything any story that deals into this?
No.
I don't think so. Not that I can think of.
Lords of the Sith, like Vader knows, but like,
dude, I haven't read that since 2015.
Right, that's fine.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I think, like, legitimately, I think Tarkin knows that the Emperor was a Tet. The Emperor has power. The Emperor has an aura. But Tarkin is so focused on his career and his advancement that I don't know if
he's turning a wide eye, or does he genuinely not know? Yeah. I don't know the answer.
Also, Palpatine hit that for a decade. Like, why would he show it?
I feel like there's, like, people have mentioned it, but maybe it's like Asajj Ventress has mentioned it, or people who would
know. Yeah. I listened to the Tarkin novel like 2 years ago.
Great novel. James Olsina.
It's pretty good. And I don't think I remember anything about that.
Yeah. I truly don't think Tarkin knows. Well,
but it's interesting because he knows stuff, because he knows about Darth Plagueis.
Yep. He knows Vader.
Yeah. Obviously, yeah.
He's in Force Choke, people.
He's one of, like, two or three people who knows that Vader is Anakin. I don't think he ever comes out and says it, but you can tell through that novel he knows.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now I want to dig into Tarkin.
Let's go here. Even if Tarkin knows Palpatine is a dark Jedi, that base level.
A gray Jedi?
No. But even if he knows, I think the idea that Palpatine, who has built this empire over decades, will then divert every resource possible to gain a sense of magic immortality. I think that is a step of, like, why would he think that? Why would he even conceive that Palpatine would do that? Mm-hmm. Because Tarkin would never do that.
So Palpatine's keeping it intentionally secret from people like Tarkin?
Yeah, because at that level, he's like, why would I even conceive of immortality as a dark... because he hasn't studied the dark side. He hasn't studied the text.
He's, like, embarrassed about it. He's like this is like my hobby project.
Like, he goes home and listens to Owl City every night. And shut up.
Tarkin's just still mad because one time he had to get rescued by Jedi, and he's, like, still salty about it. Isn't that what happened in the Citadel episode?
It is.
He rescued Jedi. Okay.
It is. Yeah, okay. Rescued by Jedi. I'm talking about the Emperor. He's like got this secret project. Don't ask me about that.
He's got a dream board up. This has got pictures of like Grogu
basically,
and Barriss Offee.
Exactly.
Like, are you trying to be immortal? No.
All right, check off the Emperor.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so yeah, the Empire kicks ass, real quick, JJ, you briefly mentioned it. R.I.P.
Oh yeah, the Marauder.
The Marauder is gone.
Yeah.
Went the way of the
Razor Crest.
Razor Crest.
That is a good point.
I have a question also though, because I did not bring this up yesterday. What about Gonki?
He's fine. No,
he grabbed
Wrecker
him.
Grabbed him.
He goes, my kid, I remember this specifically because Caitlin like laughed very loudly about this because he goes, he grabbed the droid and he jumped.
No, it was okay. I know what it means.
It's a weird scream.
You and I have dogs.
Oh, maybe that's what
it is. And we notice he grabs the droid.
It's weird. But it's very traumatic.
I have a child, for the record. I would get him out of a fire, I promise.
But Omega's the child. Gonki is the dog.
Yeah. Except they also have a dog, and
sure. Where they saved.
They didn't even say it. He goes, Batcher can handle himself or handle herself.
I legitimately got worried there for a second. But
I think it's Hunter is like, Batcher can handle herself. She's good, and she just wrecks.
Yeah, listen,
grab the dog. The droid.
I love dogs. I'm a huge dog person, right? I have two dogs. One of them is asleep right there. I hate the dinosaur dog thing.
You do?
Oh, no.
Something about the animation style. Like, is it tame? Is it not tame?
Nope.
Like the sounds it makes. Working for me. I'm sorry.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in.
3-1 down.
Instantaneous. No,
you've been voted off the
air. Yeah, Badger. Wow. We were joking about the seasons of who would be on the DVD cover, and I think this one would actually be Crosshair.
Yes,
but Badger was our second choice.
If it's an episode one novelization, Crosshair's on the front.
Do not bring that up. If you haven't read the episode one novelization, go find a hardcover and just don't look at the back. Whichever edition you get, there's three of them and they all suck.
Beautifully
the books are fine. Whatever.
Yeah. That's actually quite a good novelization.
Yeah. So we've got the Empire coming, which now we can finally, we haven't really talked about it. We've been dancing around it. This CX-2, the assassin clone. Yes. First off, he mentioned everyone's favorite character. Sidoran Scaleback. Yes. I bet you didn't know that was her full government name.
What the hell are you talking about?
That is Sid's name.
The Trandoshan.
No, it's not.
Sidoran Scaleback.
Yep. Jacob refuses to call her Sid. He calls her Sidoran Scaleback every time.
That's her full name.
Yep. Look on the book.
That stupid traitor got an off-screen betrayal, and then that is it.
Did y'all think she was going to show up in
after
she got mentioned?
Earnestly no, because she sucks.
I revoke my membership of the fan club.
That's true. JG has been for like 2 years now. Like, y'all, Sid is fine. She's great even.
Yep. She'd be
out of necessity, like Lando sold out the guy.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Remind me the reference in this episode.
It was just the CX droid. He's talking, or I always call him a droid. It's a clone. He's talking to Hemlock, and he's like, "The Trandoshan, her advice was good, or whatever.
Yeah,
her intel.
Sid led her to Fee.
To Fee.
Yeah, Jango Fee. So like, Sid just gave him more info.
And then I think he might mention her once later in the episode, but it's all just
betrayals.
I did miss that, maybe because it was a full name drop, which is really weird.
He said Trandosha.
I see.
Sid betrayed them again. Good riddance.
Yeah. When he first mentioned Trandosha, I was like, are we getting Bosk? But then,
listen, Rhea Perlman was doing Barbie movie press during this time anyway. So
we forget Sid. We've got the CX. The CX assassin here. Let's talk about it. Who is he?
It's a random clone. It's a random assassin.
I hate that.
I don't.
I hate it.
That's what Star Wars has always done.
I hate it. I know it's a random clone, but I hate it. I think it just makes no sense to have these crazy new specialized. Like, who trained this guy? Like, how did he get trained?
That's all Scorch is.
It's but
Scorch has a cool name.
Yes, but listen, there's a whole legion of commandos, right? They had a training protocol.
Assassin searchers? It's a cool new kind of droid. What do you mean?
I don't like it.
I think
clone. See, it's a clone.
Yeah.
That's what I do, too. You're calling it a droid.
I did.
It's a whole new, like, this is just the most Star Wars thing of all Star Wars things.
Yeah, now JG, cool. I feel like he's about to give a rebuttal to Corey.
Yes, I am. They keep focusing on, like, his sniping abilities. I am in the team camp of it's a clone of Crosshair at this point. They keep talking about that Crosshair went through a
Kaylin actually brought that up, crap. Actually.
Yeah, that's is something Crosshair? That people have been saying.
Is it actually Crosshair? And the reason that Crosshair that would, can't shoot is because he's a clone of Crosshair?
That would be so hard.
Crosshair
what the hell?
Is the fake Crosshair.
Yeah, is that what you're saying?
If we're going by legendary, he's Crosshair. Hair.
All right, I changed my answer. Like, I hate that worse, actually.
Tech, screw it.
So Tech is the big theory.
Tech is dead.
If this becomes Tech, that will legitimately be my level of, like, Palpatine's weird return level. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't... That is just to make a shock moment and then move on. Like,
see, I agree, actually. I hate it being Tech. I think it's worse than Palpatine coming back. One, because I like Rise of Skywalker. I'm the resident stan of that movie. I have some issues with it.
Solid movie.
But I think Tech is worse coming back because, like, that was such an emotional moment. Obviously, yes. The Emperor dying is the pivotal moment of Episode 6.
Yeah, but it's not emotional.
It kind of makes sense that the Sith can do Sith shit, whereas, like,
yeah.
Tech... So you were on the Tech train.
I was, till this episode. I think the symbolic where Omega is placing the goggles there, I think that is like, we are moving on. We have grown up. Like, we still remember Tech, but we have now, like, moved past that.
Yeah, because if you rewatch the show, because a lot of people rewatch a lot of Star Wars, if it becomes Tech, then every single thing they talked about throughout the show about Tech being God is meaningless.
It's invalidated.
Yeah, there's a lot of memeing about... Death doesn't matter because of Asajj Ventress and Boba Fett. No one seemed to have a problem with Boba Fett coming back.
I guess because he came back in Legends and it was like.
But so did Palpatine. Anyway, like, there's all this whole death doesn't matter. And most of the time, because, like, Asajj Ventress's death did not change the story arc of Dark Disciple.
No.
Tech's death did.
Yes.
Majorly impact the story arc of this TV show. So if he's back.
And so did the Emperor's, right?
And I could agree. I think that's
the big problem is that we bring back characters that had hugely story meaningful deaths and like it fundamentally changes things. So I agree. I don't want it to be Tech.
Yeah.
But I also think fundamentally why it's not Tech to me so far is also that he is leading some stuff. But we're not, like, getting full episodes of looking at this CX assassin, you know?
A lot. I mean, because I think his first appearance was in episode 1 of this, which technically that was a different CX. That was CX-1.
Right.
I'm all going based on StarWars.com database. Which he also had a cool name. It was, like, Sniper X.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, Sniper. It was like a gamer tag when you were 14, like, Sniper X.
You know what low-key really annoys me about this character?
What?
In several other Star Wars characters, actually. The helmets that have vocal modulators that make it so you can't understand what the hell they're saying.
I knew you were going to go there.
Like, outside of the helmet. It doesn't make any freaking sense.
It's intentional, too.
Like, what are the troopers in Rogue One called?
Dark troopers?
Yes, and they're like, hey, can you open the door for me? But instead they go...
Bro, if we're going to talk about what tech in Star Wars doesn't make sense...
Dude, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why has this guy got a vocalizer in his helmet if it doesn't make any freaking sense?
Can we talk for a second about Inquisitor lightsabers and how they can fly?
No. Let's look over there. Like, when he was talking to the mayor or whatever, he was like, I'm going to burn this place down. What if the mayor was like, I'm sorry, what did you say?
The mayor got shot.
By the way, the mayor was kind of a badass.
He was kind of a badass.
I totally forgot about him, and we'll talk about her in a second.
He's also, I wanted to point this out. I hope this isn't sounding the wrong way. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he's weirdly shaped, too.
Yeah, he's a big guy, but that's kind of normal.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, people look just, like lots of different ways.
Star Wars, everyone's ripped. Like, no,
yes,
dude,
we've not seen a lot of people like that.
Dude.
Yeah. Or it's like comedic, like the Twilight Sith.
Orn Fritas.
Yeah, Orn Fritas. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who did not die in season 1.
Who is like
Gonzo?
Lords of the Sith. He comes back.
But it's heavily implied that that character's like, he's gluttonous and is bad. Like, you can be fat and also, like, a normal person, right?
That's just a dude.
Yeah, he's just a guy, which is normal. I like that. We don't get that much in animation. I appreciated that.
So, yeah, so before we move on, actually, on that point, we all are at least hoping CX-2 is just... you don't want him to just be a guy.
Hearing the leading theory is Tech, which I agree, that makes perfect sense. Like, I don't want that either. So, like, I would rather have a normal clone.
Normally, I agree with you. I did not like Merrick being just whatever. Merrick was. Well, now briefly mention, we got announced today that Tales of the Jedi Season 2 is actually Tales of the Empire, and Merrick is in it.
Yep.
So we might find out who Merrick is. That'd be cool.
Maybe a special. I just don't like the idea that you can be a clone, but also be a special clone, and you're a normal clone. Like, we've established
that's
that,
the whole premise of the Bad Batch.
I know,
but
right?
Like, Rex is just a normal clone, and that dude's badass.
Is he? I mean,
Cody.
I guess so.
I think.
What, can you name any more clones? Can we name any more?
It's implied that they are. What do they call regs? They call them regs, right?
Like,
it's implied that regs are. They're not.
Well, they mention that there's this whole program, I guess, to train these CX clones, and that, like,
Crosshair didn't do it.
Crosshair was like too hardcore.
Yeah. It literally didn't work. Like, they set it up, they didn't work on him. And I also think, like, the older I get, the more I kind of get a little bit of joy about theories not happening. I'm like, Merrick wasn't anyone. I'm like, did anything in the episode tell you who he was?
Yeah.
Like,
saying yeah to disagree with you, because it did.
Okay, great.
I didn't like that.
But I will say, the internet's obsession with trying to theorize and get ahead of shows, and then when it doesn't end up being anything, being like, well, that's nothing. I'm like, just watch the show.
That I fully agree with, you know, in principle. I still don't like Merrick.
That's fair. Yeah.
But people do over-theorize. That was the whole problem with Lost. And even...
Yeah.
JG, I'll call him out, didn't watch Lost until recently.
Yes.
That's calling you out. It's not a bad thing.
No. I was in high school, okay?
For people who were there, we did nothing. It was my freshman year in college. We did nothing but talk about Lost.
I know. It's massive.
The shit we came up with was so insane.
You really give the writers, like a little too much credit, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, no, this is just an animated TV show, guys. Like,
right,
you know what I mean?
What was Damon Lindelof supposed to do when we were in our dorm rooms, like, trolling the Lost Wiki, coming up with theories?
Yeah.
Like, how are they supposed to play
hundreds of thousands of people trying to figure out these, like, this is an Easter egg, this is an Easter egg. It's like, what if they're just telling a story?
Yeah,
like,
what if this is just the tortured poets department, you know?
Yeah.
Get that right, Swifties?
It's it.
Poets, so
I've changed my line then. I guess I hope it is just an old guy.
Oh, all right.
Oh, yeah,
all right, convert.
We did it, Joe. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm a team clone of, I forgot his name now. Crosshair. Yeah,
Crosshair.
Yep.
All right, so speaking of Crosshair and the mayor, let's turn to the regular people on Pabu, which by that I mean Omega, who we haven't talked about the Bad Batch at all. We've been talking for nearly an hour.
They're not really in these a ton.
They didn't show up until 4 or 5 minutes into the second episode.
They're also weirdly not unified, which is kind of weird. Hunter was off, like, hijacking that ship.
Yeah, they were each doing their own thing.
What was up with that? That was weird. Yep. That was kind of weird.
Each had their specialties.
They just all had their thing to do. One of them hunts, one of them wrecks, one of them crosses, you know.
Yep.
One of them echo. We did get an echo mention.
We did.
But the heart of the batch is Omega, and she has, even though a limited screen appearance here, she's got a great arc. Obviously it was this episode. She starts with that mayor. I think that's the mayor's daughter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is.
We've seen her before. I don't remember.
I don't know. It was kind of implied that we should know who she is. And I was like, who the hell is this kid?
I don't know if you've noticed. I've been holding notes this whole time for those who can't see. I do take notes on these. And I said, who the F is Omega's friend? And then later I said, Shep's daughter. And then I think her name, I watched it a second time, Brianna, something like that. I could Google it. I'm not going to. It was cool to see Omega had a friend, though. And then she laid down Tech's glasses.
Yeah.
She did.
That was nice.
And her friend asked, are you coming back? And Omega says, I don't know. I hope so.
I mean,
like that.
This is reading into it too much. It's a little bit for JG, too. Big Last of Us vibes.
Yes.
With Ellie and her girlfriend. And I was like, I don't think that's what they were doing. But I'm like, this is like...
I was picking up that.
An earnest friendship in the midst of tragedy is really nice.
Yeah. And Omega's having a really tough time with this, understandably, because she's kind of the center of everything. And she says... She's like, you know, they're all here because of me.
Yeah. Mm.
And Crosshair says, it's the Empire's fault, not yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a great point. Very hard to understand. Because I think that is such a realistic feeling. When anything bad happens, people are searching for someone, or something bad happens because someone is saying, I'm doing this because of X. The person who is inflicting violence or harm, that is the cause. That
especially
is the person.
Especially in a case like this where, like, Omega didn't do something that set this off other than just be born.
Existed.
Yeah. It's one thing, like, Leia could maybe say it's her fault because she helped blow up the Death Star.
Yes.
Omega didn't blow shit up.
She's not done.
She's anything. Just, she's just alive.
She probably has blown a few things up, but that's not the point.
No, she's just alive, and I think that was a really nice brief moment of being like, no, if bad things happen, the people who do those bad things, they are at fault.
Yes,
I think that's actually a great lesson for you. You asked earlier who is the show for?
Yeah,
everyone watching the show, I think that's a great lesson because like, even as adults, that's really hard to reckon with. If something happens, like no, the person who is doing harm, they are. It is only their fault.
That's Good Will Hunting right there.
It's not your fault. Oh, God, what a good movie.
So, yeah, she has a talk with Crosshair. This whole time we've talked about how she's got this, you know, this family. It's kind of like Wrecker's her brother and Hunter's the dad and Crosshair is this, like, evil uncle, whatever. Crosshair is kind of the new daddy. Like,
Yeah,
he is.
The relationship between Omega and Crosshair.
It's her uncle that was away from the family, and then he made up with his brother at Christmas, and that was now his like second dad.
Yeah, the metaphor is like stretching really thin at this point, but it's
she's the only one that believed in him, though.
Yes.
Yeah, and now he's
even his brothers who he betrayed. Like they didn't welcome him back.
It took him some time, and
it's really heartwarming.
I was totally team anti redemption, and JG was very for redemption, and JG wins this round.
Yeah, he does. Every episode makes it better, honestly.
Yeah.
And even through the end where he, you know, fails to put the tracker on, and he's still trying, and you can see the disappointment that he wants this to work, and he's fully Bad Batch again.
And I mean,
yeah,
a season ago, even 10 episodes ago, there's no way that he would have been hesitant to let Omega sacrifice himself.
He lit people on fire, dude.
Yeah.
Like, straight up.
But she's like, no, I need to go do this. And he's like, but you'll be in danger.
Yep.
And she's like, that's okay.
He's learned and evolved, man.
Yeah, I love it.
It's really nice.
Oh, all right. So any final thought? Is there anything we missed here?
I don't the plan. I want to talk about the plan.
Yeah.
Her plan is falling apart, right?
Yeah. I do want to say the only I want to ask you guys a question about that because I want to hear. I think this will be a cool jump off into it. Steven and our team made this point in our side chat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So technically, this episode ends with Omega going to Tantiss and the Bad Batch doesn't know where she is. The first episode of this season, Omega is at Tantiss and the Bad Batch doesn't know where she is.
Mm-hmm.
So storytelling-wise, there is a little bit of repetition where the Bad Batch, they haven't learned anything about Tantiss this whole season.
Yeah.
So do you guys feel like this is just almost a rinse and repeat of where we were? Or does it feel, because I think it,
well, people have talked about how Mando's done this a couple times.
Yeah. It's the same story beat, but it's still
the thing I hope is that there's a secret we don't know yet. There's another plan. She's another tracker.
Like a plan C or something.
She's a hidden tracker.
I don't know how she would hide it. I don't want to get into how she would hide it.
It's in her hat.
Is she wearing a hat?
She weirdly took her hat off at the end.
Oh, okay.
You didn't notice that? She's leaning. First of all, put that kid in a seat, like, bro. Like, the seat, we're in space.
She's just chilling. She's just
leaning against the wall, like, in the ship. And she, takes her hat off and holds her in her hand. I'm like, there's a tracker in
that.
Okay, there's just a tracker in that hat. I like
there's
that.
There's something. I don't like
also,
that.
Have we ever seen anybody shoot a tracker at a ship in Star Wars and it goes, ooh?
It's no. Like, it always hits. It always hits. Like, I know that Obi-Wan just, like, baseball sidearmed it and attacked with love. Yes, it was, like, perfect.
And I know that I think what they were going for is Crosshair missed another shot.
Yeah.
But really, just the bullet didn't go far.
No, it did.
He could have been perfect aim, and it just didn't have the thrust.
Yeah. It did. I hope the plan is that Omega is smarter than we've given her credit for, and that her plan wasn't just naive. Because Crosshair said, that's naive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
No, there's something there.
I think you're right that, like, if this turns out not just a blind hunt for Omega, it's different. Because I didn't even really think about that in the moment.
If it ends up being just a wash, the whole thing of like, now we're back to the beginning. I hate that when they do that.
And based on the non-spoiler reactions we've gotten from, because press got everything but the finale, I think, so far.
Yes.
Again, like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they got something up their sleeve because apparently...
What's going to happen? Are we going to end up at Mount Tantiss and blow it all to hell? Is that what's going to happen?
I think ultimately it's going to come down to the fact that it's going to be Omega that lets her brothers know where they are. I don't think they're ever going to find out where Tantiss is on their own.
Agreed.
I think, and that's why they pair it with the Emery episode.
Yep.
I think it's going to be Emery and Omega with the kids and everything.
I agree.
And in the end, when the episode's titled the Cavalry is the Bad Batch plus Rex and everyone else.
Yep.
Here's a question about Mount Tantiss.
Yeah.
Like, in the big picture here. Does the whole plan work? because the Emperor comes back, right, in the sequel trilogy.
Oh, that's not, I mean.
But just like, so like, I genuinely, this is actually kind of nice, though, that's why I'm asking this question, is like, I don't actually know how the show is going to conclude at all.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I think they will get enough info that they need of Omega, but Omega and the Bad Batch will...
Because the Emperor is trying to clone, what, Jedi, I guess, yep. for himself, but also maybe for something else, I suppose. But, like, does it work? Is he able to do it?
We also know, based on the other stories I mentioned, Fallen Order, Sons of the Empire, blah, 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 he's still trying to do this in 10, 20 years.
And he does do it. The Dark Troopers, like in Mando, like there's an element of something, some weird science in there as well, like...
So the
science,
the fate of Mount Tantus is very much up in the air.
Yes,
which I actually like.
A giant weapon that can destroy things very easily. We don't know actually if Jedha was the first Sith.
That's true.
For that weapon,
I feel like someone brought that up recently.
I did.
Oh, okay, you.
Yeah. I've been saying this for weeks.
Yeah, I actually really like that, and I hate that I like that.
Yeah, destroy the evidence.
But the thing that it's a little early for a Death Star test. It's about.
Is it?
It's about 18 years early.
Yeah, it's very early.
Yeah, because like if they test
Andor, your favorite TV show. They're literally attaching the pieces of it. It doesn't
literally
exist.
The only post credit scene in Star Wars history. No, Mando season 2 ending.
Yeah, but like they're literally putting together the plating of it. Yeah, so it doesn't exist.
Right. Okay. Andor that.
Also, there's a book Catalyst. Also, James Luceno.
God, it's so good.
Catalyst takes place during like Clone Wars.
Right.
It spans. Okay,
Utini.com/timelines. Did I get that right?
No.
All right. So before we end up here, and we still got a little bit of time left, we've got some community questions I wanted to bring up. From the Discord, Lando says, we keep seeing how evil Hemlock is. Do we think he'll pay for it by the end of the show, or will he get away with it? We know that the cloning project continues through the First Order, Project Harvester. But would they be pessimistic enough to let him win?
He's getting blown up.
Yeah?
The Emperor's going to cut off his other hand.
Yeah, no, this guy is dead in the finale.
Full circle.
Easily, 100%.
If the Death Star doesn't blow him up, then Tarkin's going to kill him.
Yes.
Ooh, I like that.
I like that.
Because it's a tactical decision. He has to tie up the loose end.
It mirrors Rebels end of season one, where he had, or maybe beginning of season two, where he has the Inquisitor come in and kill the two guys on Lothal, the two idiots who screw everything up. I like that.
Yeah, I think it works. I like that too.
All right, so yeah, we think that Hemlock's gonna lose. I agree. I think that as far as pessimism, there will be some like element of the bad guys. One, if not one, like further their thing, but the good guys are gonna win. It's Star Wars.
Yeah, ultimately, I mean, I think I still have no idea what's gonna happen with like Omega and any of this. So we have no idea.
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned not knowing how this is gonna end. Most of the prequel animated shows we've gotten have been prequels. We knew Clone Wars was gonna end with Order 66.
Yeah, that's right.
We knew that Rebels was gonna lead to. I mean, we didn't know the fate of the Rebel crew of the Ghost crew. But we knew that, like...
The Rebel Alliance, ultimately. I mean, you know that stuff, but, like, we don't know anything. We don't know Tantus. We don't know Omega. It's hard to predict.
I don't think it's going to end... I don't think it's so easy to predict that it's going to end happy and optimistic. Like, I think there might be some little bit of moments, but I think the whole tone is really setting us up for a very bleak, dark ending.
If we didn't have Rogue One, like, I don't know that I would think that. I mean, but we've seen that they're able to kill off huge major characters, and it's part of the story.
Pardon the dog, as you may have heard.
I know.
That transitions into Gia asks, actually, technically, this is a question from Gia's husband, who asked her, are Star Wars people mean? And he doesn't mean Star Wars characters. He means the writers, because he says, they just kill and torture everyone. They kill all the good guys. I don't always need a happy ending, but... And
it's a good question, actually.
Fundamentally incorrect. I think that we get a lot of happy endings in Star Wars. It's just that life continues. But Return of the Jedi ends very happily. I think like Mando, sort of like Mando and Grogu, and pretty much every season, pretty happy.
What was that?
Mando and Grogu.
No. Oh, the upcoming movie?
I like Star Wars a lot, guys. Just keep it there. But I think that Star Wars, this might be both optimistic and pessimistic, oddly, is very reflective of life. Like, the stories that are told... are kind of reflective of the times that we got right now. I think that there are stories that are a little hopeful. I think there are also, like, the end of the sequel trilogy, all the main cast still is alive. Like, that was kind of a big point. Like, Rey, Finn, Poe, Snap Lexi dies, and more.
I was just going to mention Ben Solo.
Oh.
Is he, though?
Oh, God, no. Shut up.
Sorry, Rey.
How much time do we have?
Archiveofourown.com.
Yeah. But I think there is a point where, like, it is a show / series about eternal galactic war.
Yeah.
So, like, you kind of got to have some
It's not
people.
Called the Star Piece.
Exactly. Right. That would be... Mm,
got it.
That was you nailed it. Good job, Corey.
Thank you.
Man, I think they're realistic. And I think that there is just, unfortunately, key part of dramatic storytelling that, like, loss hits. Like, if you experience some loss, it helps you experience life. Like, all of us have at some point lost someone close to us, and that is a moment as an adult where you learn, like, okay, I miss them now, so now what can I do in these days to reflect a person's memory in a light way? And that's kind of where stories go.
So, Gia, I think what Eric is saying is give your husband a hug and say, it's going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. It really helps.
Pretty much.
All right, Jacob asks, Emery mentioned, we talked about Emery and Nala Se a little bit, but mentioned that Nala Se discarded her at one point. Do we think they were planning for a clone with Omega's M-count abilities all the way back then? And that Emery was maybe the first test who didn't work out.
Yes. Ooh, that's brilliant. Question. And I never thought that before. Yes, 100%. Yeah. I think that sounds right.
I mean, if the Emperor secretly planted this whole Order 66 thing, I mean, sure, there were more secrets,
yeah.
right?
So, yeah. Why not start the cloning process back when you made the army?
Yep. Right. Yep. So I did mention earlier, because in season, I think one, they mentioned Omega, obviously, and Alpha. They never confirm, as far as I remember, that it's Boba Fett. I feel like it's implied. Maybe Emery is Alpha.
Maybe so.
She was.
I'd buy that.
I need to rewatch that episode. Yeah, I don't know if any of y'all have seen it lately.
It sort of established that, like, in Attack of the Clones, too, the language that they use around talking about Boba Fett, like, I mean, I guess we reckon on it, but, like, it's kind of weird. Like, they talk about it like all he wanted was a Jango Fett. All he wanted was an unaltered clone. Like, that's the explanation for Boba Fett.
Yeah, but right. Meanwhile, so, Tanwei is like, ah,
yes. Yeah. I don't think that Tanwei was referring to Jango's payment as specimen one.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like kind of weird, right?
So, I really like Emery being Alpha. I think that's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Right. And also, that might never be confirmed, but I think it's a really cool theory.
Also, why do they have to be female? Are they all female? It's interesting to acknowledge the fact that, like, we have now two characters that are maybe Alpha and Omega, and they're both women, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe something can be there.
Yeah. Literate Panda on Discord asks a very important question. This is a hard-hitting.
Great.
Are these the cutest Star Wars kids and babies of all times? The three that we see?
They're colorful. I mean,
that's the one that gets kidnapped.
I'm telling you, the colorfulness, it added a lot to the show for me, genuinely.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is Stinky a joke to you?
Yeah,
100%. Stinky joke to you. We didn't really talk about the other baby. He was pretty cute too.
Yeah,
he had a teddy bear, and that was.
Yeah,
get that kid his teddy bear.
As I mentioned, I take notes. I wrote, "Oh, cute guys to open the episode," and I wrote, "Question: Force sensitive?" I'm like, "Oh, am I picking something up?" And then the episode was like, "You idiot! They're force sensitive." Like, okay, check. Yeah.
No, these kids were absolutely cute, and I think it really comes down to the first time we're seeing childlike innocence in a place of sterile despair. When the kid's like, the fact that, I mean, again, shout out to the writers, being like, it's not the kid saying, I want to leave, I need to go. It's she saying, hey, Nala Say said she'd check if I could go home. Can you check on that? Mm. Like, she still believes in good.
That still believes
in innocence, which is, I think, the most childlike thing in the world.
Is there a more sense of, like, naivete about alien kids also, maybe?
Yeah,
maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe
in this context.
Yeah. I think that also, again, a lot of the human kids, we've seen a lot of human clones,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if there's just a little bit about, like, that's part of the system that we become desensitized to.
Maybe,
you know, and the fact that this is all the way back in the Thrawn novels of, like, the Empire being anti-alien Star Wars doesn't need to be subtle.
They're extra specimens because they're...
Yes.
It's very obvious.
They don't...
Specimens.
I mean, they don't look like us, so do they deserve the same rights we have? Is not a revolutionary concept.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't... And we briefly mentioned the doll, the Lula doll. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about the last shot of Emery leaving the doll.
Oh, yeah.
That's
breaking.
And she smiles. Like, we see her in the up in the
rafters.
Uh-huh, yep.
No, Emery's a Batcher. She's gonna be an honorary Batcher.
Yeah, which is the dog's name.
Yes,
the dinosaur dog.
Dinosaur dog.
and then the second episode ends.
That Funko's gonna be awesome.
Kind of similarly, with Omega meditating that she learned from Gungi.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. great way to end both episodes.
Yes.
I mean,
give her a seatbelt. That's my only.
Yeah. Dr. Helton over here.
All the things considered, since it's been a while since I was last on the show, and I've told this to a lot of the team since, I truly believe that if this season continues with the quality average of these episodes, I think for my money, this is the best animated season we've gotten.
Of a single season, yeah.
Of any show.
That's pretty solid.
Like, the bar for the episodes is so high. These were two magnificent episodes. Two very different. One very quiet, one very action-heavy. They're just really wonderfully done. I mean, Star Wars animation, for my money right now, is doing the best Star Wars that there is.
Yeah, speaking of animation, real quickly, the shot of that Star Destroyer coming over Pop.
Dude!
Chilly. Good with the lights.
With the searchlights.
There's got to be some big ass light bulbs.
Oh, yeah.
No singing.
Oh, yeah.
No singing.
Corey's over here. The science doesn't add up.
Yeah.
How did the bombs fall in space?
Yeah.
Get that?
Oh, my God. In second law. I don't know which law it is.
It's the. But no, but that was a. It was like a very big Jedi vibes. Very big darker.
Yeah.
Version.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
love that.
I can almost hear the like the horns like in Jedi.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm. over the, yeah. And it makes you remember like. We forget Star Destroyers are so big
and menacing, menacing and scary. Like one of those things shows up and blocks out the sun. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, yeah. The eclipse happens in 3 days. So
I originally wondered why they did these two episodes back to back because they don't quite do the part one and part two thing.
No.
But I think the fact that one was a like you said the only one that didn't have a Bad Batch member,
yep.
And then pairing it with the Bad Batch episode was very smart. JJ sent us in Slack to be like to make sure people are still like, no, it's still a Bad Batch episode. Like you could like it, but I think the quality level of the two was just continues to be superb. I love this season.
I think
really,
I would,
really do.
I think I would add on to you and say that if this really does land the landing here, I think this is the best animated show collectively as a whole. Like
even above Resistance for you.
Oh, yeah.
Resistance. Okay, Resistance has great episodes, but they're solo.
So there might be a point though where because we all have to say you gotta get to the first season of Clone Wars, you gotta get to the first season of Rebels. I don't know if I have the qualify for Bad Batch.
No, yeah, I think the collective.
I would argue that Bad Batch stands on the shoulders of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Like we said earlier, it's kind of season 8 through 10.
That's true.
Yeah, right.
So but also, Clone Wars season 7, I think, wasn't as strong as the season,
but it is telling its own story. But
oh,
I don't
think
it
have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't need to watch Clone Wars to watch Bad Batch, in my opinion.
True.
It was true. Enhance it, but
they give you enough.
Star Wars.
It would be. I would love to find the fan who has watched the Bad Batch and not seen the Clone Wars
there
who
might
is
be some.
Not 5 years old.
There might be some.
There Maybe. Might be.
You got to meet little boy Kenny and be like, hey, I'm 14.
Yeah.
Don't kill my master.
All right. Real quickly, and then we are going to finally get the hell out of here. Any predictions for next week's episode 12 is called Juggernaut. And other than what do we think is coming down the pipeline?
Man,
I like the plan thing. I think Omega has got a secret plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think they're gonna be like, I think there's gonna be a big reveal where, you know, Hemlock has got, no, you're trapped here. There's no hope. Blah blah blah. And she's like, sorry, I got a transmitter.
Yeah,
she's the button. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's what's
like, I think so. Juggernaut to me has to be like a weapon of some kind.
Mm.
My far left field prediction is that we find out pretty quickly how Omega is signaling the Bad Batch. Like, I think they don't hide it. They're like, oh, she did add that transmitter or something else.
Yeah.
And in the episode is the Bad Batch finding their Juggernaut. It's like, this is what we're bringing to Tantus.
Mm.
We are going all in. They keep fighting. We can't. And we'll get a nice little speech from Hunter. Like, we can't run anymore. They found us on Pabu. They found us here. They found Omega.
Yeah.
We need to go to them and finish this. And this is where we start the final arc of the Clone Wars of the Bad Batch. Like, this is for my money, this is the last show that involves this animation, that involves these characters.
Bro, the week this ends, we get Tales of the Empire.
Right, but that's different. That's not Clone Wars. You know what I mean? Like, it's animated, but I think this is where they find, like, what is our job? Yeah. What is our final weapon we take to Tantus to take it down?
And then the cavalry comes.
The cavalry has arrived. Like, it's such a beautiful. I know that, like, obviously you're not there. That's the title of last episode. And for any fans of Aaron Sorkin always, like, titles his last episodes. Like, it's a wonderful day. Or, like, there's something that always is consistent. And the cavalry has arrived being the ending of the series that we're getting to. They're building a cavalry. They're getting a juggernaut. They're getting the band back together. Like, they are doing this right.
Yeah, my one thought, and I don't know if this is going to happen next week. We still need, I feel like we got to see Cody. We got to see Gregor and Rex and Echo all together.
Yep.
Because we've seen Gregor in Echo's ship or whoever. Yeah, he was with
Echo. It was Echo, yeah.
But he didn't talk. And we need, they got to get
Wolf.
Rebels. And then, and then Wolf's got to come
back. With the Empire right now.
So there's still got to be a Wolf episode.
Yep.
JG, any clown makeup for next week? I feel like we're kind of low on makeup this week.
We're bringing y'all down. I feel so bad.
I think next week is going to be simply an Emery and Omega episode. I think the reason they combine these two,
that's great.
It's going to pair them together, I think. I have no clue how that's going to connect to Juggernaut, but they'll probably tell us. But
what about the reveal for the guy in the suit?
The clone CX trooper.
Uh-huh. We also don't know what's in the tank, too. Like, whenever the red tank thing.
Oh, it's Merrick.
Sure. That could be the Juggernaut.
Check out Tales of the Empire.
Okay, here the clown makeup is Emery is the Alpha. So we bring the Alpha and Omega together and they get the powers of God.
Okay, yeah, Captain Planet with our powers combined.
That's it.
One final reminder. This episode was brought to you by The Utini Show, a brand new show from The Utini Podcast Network about whatever fandom they want to talk about that week. It's great. Check it out. It just started this week. Good stuff. And I think that'll do it, finally, for this week's episode of Bounty Hunt. Thank you, Corey.
Yes.
Thank you, Eric, Corey, for joining us. JG, thanks as always. If you're looking for other great podcasts about Star Wars, nerd culture, sports, anything else, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup at the Utini Podcast Network. We'd also appreciate it if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you so much. And an extra special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Vizinski on our High Council, and Captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for all your amazing support. Head on over to our Discord to continue the chat in the Star Wars The Bad Batch channel. A huge shout out to our editor, Kyle, for his excellent work in getting us out into your feeds timely every week. And thanks to everyone here at Utini HQ for getting this set up today. Thank you, as always, especially to everyone who listens. That's it for us. May the Force be with you, and we will see you next week.
You've been listening to the Bounty Hunt Podcast.
Yeah? Good.
To learn more about other Utini Patreon exclusives, visit utini.com.